Chapter 42. The phone hopped and buzzed. The ringtone was thin and reedy, a plain electronic sound. Sorensen answered the call and listened. Rachel could see in her face it was not the call she was expecting. She wasn't being taken off the board. Not yet. She was being given information about the case instead. Not bad news, necessarily, judging by her expression, but not good news either. Interesting news, probably. Perplexing news, possibly. She clicked off and looked across the wet laminate table and said,
"Our medical examiners finally got around to moving the dead guy out of the old pumping station."
Reacher said, "And?"
"A hitherto unnoticed condition became readily apparent."
"Which is?"
"Just before they stabbed him to death, they broke his arm."
Sorensen told Reacher her Bureau MEs had hoisted the dead guy onto a wheeled gurney for the short trip out to the meat wagon. No body bag, which was normal for that kind of situation, where a corpse was lying in a lake of drying blood. No point getting the bag sticky both inside and out. They had planned to zip the guy up in the truck. But on the way to the truck, the gurney had hit a bump and the dead guy's right arm had flopped off the side, with the elbow turned the wrong way out. They had used a portable X-ray machine right there on the sidewalk and determined that the joint was shattered. It was inconceivable the injury could have happened at any prior time because the pain would have been unbearable. No one could walk around with a shattered elbow, not even for a minute. Certainly no one could drive all the way from Denver. And the injury wasn't post-mortem either. There was a little bleeding visible through the skin, and some very slight swelling, but not much. Blood pressure had continued after the break, but not for long. "Defensive injury," Reacher said, "in a way. At one remove, as it were. He pulled a weapon, a gun or possibly a knife of his own, in self-defense. They disarmed him with a degree of violence. I assume he was right-handed."
"Most people are," Sorensen said. "And then they cut him and stabbed him, and then he bled out moments later."
"Did the eyewitness hear a scream?"
"He didn't say so."
"Busted elbows hurt bad. He must have heard something. A yelp, at least. Pretty loud, probably."
"Well, we can't ask him now."
"No weapons found at the scene? His or theirs?" Sorensen shook her head.
"They probably tossed them all down the open pipe."
"You still think he was just a trade attaché, far from home, with a knife or a gun in his pocket?"
Sorensen shook her head again.
"Something I haven't told you," she said. "The CIA has been sniffing around all night long. They called within minutes. Even before Bureau Counterterrorism got there. Well before the State Department guy got there."
"What did they want?"
"Updates and information."
"There you go," Reacher said. "The dead guy was one of their own."
"So why am I still on the case? This thing should have gone nuclear by now."
She checked her phone again. It had bars and battery, but it was stubbornly silent. They hit the outlet mall next. Cheap stuff in a cheap and dismal building. About a third of the units sold men's clothing. Reacher recognized some of the brands. He wasn't impressed by the discount pricing. In his opinion, the steep reductions merely brought the values close to where they should have been all along. As always, his choices were limited by the availability or otherwise of the right big and tall sizes. But he managed to find generic blue jeans at one store and a three-layer upper body ensemble at another, t-shirt, dress shirt, and cotton sweater, all shades of blue, plus blue socks and white underwear at a third store, and a short blue warm-up jacket at a fourth. He figured he would keep the boots he already had. Just a few days more. They were okay.
"You like blue?"
Sorensen asked him.
"I like everything to match," he said.
"Why?"
"Someone told me I should."
Total damage was $77 in cash, which was well within target. 3 days wear minimum, maybe four maximum, somewhere between about 20 and 25 bucks a day. Cheaper than living somewhere, and easier than washing and ironing and folding and packing. That was for damn sure. Sorensen asked,
"Where do you get your money?"
Reacher said, "Here and there."
"Where and where?"
"Saving some of it."
"And the rest?"
"I work sometimes."
"Doing what?"
"Casual labor, whatever needs doing."
"How often?"
"Now and then."
which can't pay much.
I get the rest from alternative sources.
What does that mean?
Spoils of war, usually.
What war?
Reacher said, I steal from bad guys.
And you're admitting this to me?
I'm following your example. Federal agencies seize property all the time, right? You find coke in some guy's glove box, it's goodbye BMW. Same with houses and boats.
That's different. That stuff reduces our expenditures. It spares the taxpayer.
Likewise, Reacher said. I'd be on food stamps otherwise. He chose the Red Roof Inn for his shower, a franchise operation with the owner on duty at the desk, and like all such guys, happy to put a little extracurricular cash in his back pocket. As expected, he settled for a pair of tens, one for him and one for whichever maid was first up for favors. Reacher carried his gas station purchases into the room in one bag and his new outfit in four others. Sorensen came in with him and checked around. She didn't say anything, but he saw she wasn't happy with the bathroom window. It wasn't big, but it was big enough. It was a ground floor room with a paved alley out back. Stay here if you want, Reacher said. I'll leave the shower curtain open to keep your mind at rest. She smiled, but she didn't reply. Not directly. Instead, she said,
How long will this take?
22 minutes for the shower, he said. Then 3 to get dry and 3 to get dressed, plus 5 for unforeseen eventualities. Call it 33 minutes total.
That's very exact.
Precision is a virtue. She left, and he started peeling off his old clothes. They were in pretty bad shape. He'd been wearing them for days, since Bolton, South Dakota. In places they were crusted with mud, and in other places they were spotted with blood, some of it his own, and some of it not. He balled the wrecked garments up tight and stuffed them all in the bathroom trash. Then he cleaned his teeth very thoroughly and set the shower running. He washed his hair and soaped himself up from head to foot and scrubbed and rinsed. 8 minutes. Then he got out of the shower and used a washcloth and a sink of hot water in the mirror above it to attend to his face. He soaked off the hardened smears of blood and sponged the open lacerations carefully. He rubbed a slick of soap on his upper lip and sniffed as hard as he could until he started sneezing uncontrollably. Clots of blood came out, as big as garden peas. Then he got back in the shower and washed himself from head to foot all over again. He toweled off and dressed and combed his hair with his fingers. He put his old passport and his ATM card in one pocket and his toothbrush in another. He put the short fat guy's motel key in his jacket. He ate aspirins and drank water from the tap. Then he found his antiseptic cream and his band-aids, and he opened the window to let the steam out and clear the mirror. Julia Sorensen was in the back alley, watching the window. She was on the phone. She wasn't enjoying the call. She was arguing, but politely, with her boss, Reacher guessed, hence the restraint. He couldn't hear what was being said on either end of the conversation, but he figured the guy was finally taking her off the board, and she was pitching to stay on. She seemed to be making all kinds of good points. Her free hand was chopping the air, pushing objections aside, moving persuasive reasons front and center. She was using the physical gestures to put animation in her voice. The telephone was a poor means of communication, in Reacher's opinion. It had no room for body language and nuance. He looked back in the mirror and used toilet paper to dry his cuts. Then he squeezed thin worms of cream into them from the tube of antiseptic. He wiped the excess and dried the intact areas of skin. He put a band-aid over the biggest cut, another over the second biggest. He dumped the trash on top of his old clothes and closed the bathroom window and headed for the bedroom. He took a look in the mirror next to the closet. The new clothes were pretty good. His hair looked okay. His face was a mess. No oil painting, that was for sure. But then it never had been. And it was certainly a lot better than an hour ago. A whole lot better. Almost halfway human. He stepped out to the lot. Sorensen's cruiser was right outside the door. She was leaning on the front fender. Reacher guessed she had left the alley when he closed the bathroom window. At that point, she had hustled around to the front, double quick. Not to greet him, to make sure he didn't run. She said,
You clean up pretty well.
Something in her face, something in her voice. Not hurt, not anger, not necessarily even disappointment. More like confusion. Reacher said, What?
I got a call.
I saw.
My SAC.
I guessed. Did he take you off the case? She shook her head no, then changed it to a yes.
She said, I mean, I'm off the case, yes. But not because he took me off, no.
Then why?
Because there is no case. Not anymore.
What does that mean?
It means that as of 20 minutes ago, there is no active investigation. Which is logical, really, because as far as the Federal Bureau of Investigation is concerned, nothing happened in Nebraska last night. Absolutely nothing at all.